Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk.
Well, good night. Good evening, everybody. How are you doing? This is Steve Peasley. You're listening to InvestTalk, and it is December 29, 2015. And I really appreciate you being with me. Whether you're a beginner investor or experienced, doesn't matter. Thank you very much for listening. As the year approaches its close, you hear many terms. You heard me talk about the Santa Claus rally. Have you ever heard of the Boston Snow Indicator? Have you heard of the January effect? Now, there's no valid or scientific data to these phenomena. History just shows that they tend to happen. But don't think that that's something you can like, okay, I'm gonna invest on this day and sell on this day because that's gonna work. You can't do that. It's not that simple. The Santa Claus rally is a rally that usually occurs between Christmas and New Year's. You know, December is usually a positive month. And it's usually last 15 days that of the month that you generally get your Santa Claus rally. And we really didn't get it. The market's trying to make a big effort in the last 4 or 5 days, but it's still below the high that we made in December. It's still below that mark. And you only have a day and a half left, or 2 days left, in the market before New Year's. Anyways, so there's many theories like this. And some people believe them. And some believe that the rallies are because of year-end tax considerations, January, you know, there's reasons why people believe this. So the January effect is a stock market phenomenon that occurs at the end of every year because the theory is people are doing tax loss selling before the end of the year, and then they put all that money back to work in January. Is that true? Well, who knows? The Boston Snow Indicator, white Christmas in Boston, if this happens, stock prices climb. And by the way, we had no white Christmas in Boston this year, just so you know. It's pretty dubious, I would think. Don't you think? But there's people out there that talk about these. Although these indicators are fun to learn about, by no means should you use them as an indicator to invest in the market. That's not what you use. It is always important to first do a broad analysis of the economic environment that you're in, decide what stocks are going to work in that economic environment, what you really want to do is try to understand the economic cycle and when the next recession's coming. Because the stock market will fall before the next recession shows up and says, oh, here's a recession. It will fall. So you look at the fundamentals of the companies, you look at the fundamentals of the economy, and you invest based on those. Now, do you have a question about the market indicators or year-end planning? Do you know what the presidential cycle is telling us, which is just like these three I just talked about, the Santa Claus rally, the Boston Snow Indicator, the January? Do you know what they just tend to be? Do you know what the presidential cycle indicator was for 2015, because it's the year before the presidential election? Very consistently, the market is up. Well, not this year, but it's not too far from being up. It could be in the next day or two. Possible. That would be a pretty strong couple of days, but it's possible. So do you have any questions about this kind of thing? 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion, so give me a call.
Hey, Steve. This is Arun from Philadelphia. I listen to your show all the time, or pretty much every day. I had a question on the 401k stuff. I used to work for a company. I don't work for that company anymore. I had about $10,000 in my... I'm 31 years old. So I moved. I rolled over the money from 401k of the previous company to a Vanguard IRA account. After listening to the show, I thought it's better to invest in Roth IRA. So I was wondering, can I move that money over from 401k account to regular IRA? Can I move the money from regular IRA to Roth IRA? And how do I set it up? I mean, I have an account with Vanguard, Fidelity, and Schwab. Any specific investment brokerage companies you recommend? Thank you. Bye-bye.
The short answer is yes. You can open, and how you would do it, you just open up a Roth IRA, and you roll the regular IRA into the Roth. But just be aware, and you could do it anywhere, Vanguard, anywhere, you know, E-Trade, any place you want to. Just be aware when you do that, whatever you roll over from the regular IRA to the Roth IRA, that money that you roll over to the Roth is going to be added to your adjusted gross income for the year that you do it. If you do it this year, it's going to be for 2015. Do it next year, 2016, it'll be added to your income in 2016. And of course, I wouldn't do it till at least next year. I mean, that's only next week. But that's the only big drawdown. But again, then the growth of the Roth IRA, all that growth, you'll never have to pay taxes on it again. That's the big benefit. So it really is a personal thing. If you're older, over 55 or so, I tend not to recommend Roths because you don't have the time to build, really good increases. If you're in your 40s or younger, I like the Roths better. Doesn't mean I don't like them. It's just, it's a personal choice of how you want to manage your tax consequences, in retirement, before retirement. It's that kind of thing. If you have a lot of, if you got laid off and you didn't make much money this year, that'd be a good time to roll the regular IRA into the Roth because your tax rate will be low. So there's, again, it's a real personal thing you got to think about. But the answer is yes, you can do it. And it doesn't really matter where you do it. You can open up the Roth. So the process is open the Roth first and then roll from regular to Roth IRA. And it'd probably be pretty simple to wherever the IRA is now, open up the Roth IRA there. They'll help you. They'll help you do that. Responsible investing is becoming more appealing. Responsible investing to investors, more appealing to investors because it makes good business sense. We're talking about, sustainable. You're talking about environmental friendly kinds of investing, making sense of sustainable investing. That's going to be our main talking point today. It's interesting because the arguments are so different than they were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you were told, corporations are told, you need to do this because it's good for the economy and you have to, be a good economic citizen for. They don't use that argument anymore. Interesting. We'll talk about that. I think it was pretty interesting. I have a possible theory. How about, will Treasury yields fall in 2016? Remember, the Fed's raising interest rates, so your yields should go up. Treasury yields should go up. But what if they don't? And why? Are the arguments that they may not go up? I think that might be something we need to explore, and we're going to explore it. Home prices rise at fastest annual rate since August 2014. The S&P Case-Shiller report came out today about homes and where prices are rising, and I think we should talk about that because everybody likes to talk about real estate. And I want to talk about Chipotle's disastrous 2015. Chipotle. By the way, I really love their food. But I'm going to use them as an example of as something to be aware of as an investor. How to protect yourself from things like this Chipotle disaster for 2015. Could you have foreseen the E. coli thing that they've been dealing with? No. But could you have foreseen that the stock might go down? Yes. And how would you have done that? And I'm going to go over that. And it really is a good lesson on watching other high-flying stocks. Because I get a lot of calls from people, I want to buy the Amazon. I want to buy Netflix. I want to buy Google because they're so high and they've been going up forever. Well, I'm not saying you don't invest in them. I'm not saying that. But I need you to recognize the dangers and how the risk go ratcheting up and up and up as the stock price goes up and up and up faster than the earnings. If the stock price goes up a lot faster than the earnings are going up, you got a problem building. I don't know when that problem will come back or how it will fall, or, you know, something's going to happen. And Chipotle is a good example of the kinds of things you can watch for. That's going to be our talking point today. And I also have an email question from a listener who wants to talk about GAAP earnings, general accounting principles. I will talk about that. With a new year coming, it's time to take stock of your investments. How long has it been since you've rebalanced your retirement portfolios? And one of the services I provide to a limited number of listeners is a free retirement review. And it's nothing special, because all money managers will do that. All of them. But I will do it too. My next date is January 13th in San Ramon. That's my limited schedule. I mean, it's pretty full, so you really got to call or email. So to save your time for January 13th, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule the meeting.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Jim from Indiana. Hey, I was giving you a call today about XLF. Seems like a good time now that the Fed has set some rates to put some money into XLF. And, you know, long term, what are your thoughts on how that's going to do? Thanks a lot. Look forward to hearing your answer.
XLF, that's the ETF, exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the S&P financial sector. Okay, so financial select sector index. Okay, so it's a bunch of financial companies inside it. It's down for the year, but it's very flat, down just a little bit for the year. And of course, it had that big dip in August with the market, retested that dip in October, and now been slowly coming back and been going sideways for the last couple of months. XLF, financials. Well, remember at the opening show, I said, well, you got to think about, well, what is the background and the economic environment we're in? Well, we know that the Fed is probably going to raise rates. We know that the Fed has said that it's not going to be a normal rate rising cycle. So we don't know how fast they're going to raise rates, but they're in that mode right now, while the rest of the world is not. They are going the opposite direction, basically. They're weakening their currencies. So if our currencies are going to get, if our currency is going to get stronger, if that is going to happen, which, you know, is not a certain thing, then will the financials do better? Or will the financials do better with higher interest rates versus the same interest rates? Those are the kinds of questions you're going to ask yourself, because you want to know, well, how do they make money? They make money by borrowing money and then lending it out. Well, in a rising interest rate environment, will they do better? I will say this. In a very slowly rising interest rate environment, banks do pretty good because they can adapt. If the interest rates spike, they do poorly. They also do very poorly in a recession. Or if a recession is coming, they'll start to fall beforehand. Do we see a recession coming? I don't see it yet. I see dangers, but I don't see it yet. And the leading economic indicators are telling us that we're not going into recession. So this could be a decent investment for 2016. It could. But I would rather see you buy particular banks which had much better fundamentals in themselves than the whole index, because I think there's going to be winners and losers. So especially the banks that lent, that have a lot of junk bonds on their books. They lent money to suspicious, a lot of oil exposure and companies that don't look like they're going to make it. A lot of commodity companies that, if they lent a lot of money. So I think you got to be a little more specific as to what banks you should be in as opposed to a broad index. I'm financial advisor and registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. Justin and I are very appreciative that you have been a regular InvestMont listener this year. We really, and all the podcasts, we really do appreciate it. And all the production crew and staff at KPP Financial, I want to wish you a happy, prosperous new year. Eight 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 nine nine two four two seven eight is my number. Give me a call. Love to talk to you. Let's talk about sustainable investing. What is sustainable investing? Well, it's kind of a metamorphosis from social responsible investing to now what we call sustainable investing. And it's changed. Now, there still are people that insist on just being socially responsible investors. That's all in it. They won't buy any stocks that, you know, no tobacco stocks, no stocks that make weapons, no stocks that have any hint of environmental impact, that kind of thing, oil companies. Well, now we have to look, it's kind of moved from that to this. Have you ever noticed the argument used to be, especially in social responsible investing, that argument that people make is, you, Mr. Company, have to do X, Y, Z. You've got to stop pumping oil out of the ground. You've got to stop polluting the air. You got to stop. Whenever anybody takes that position, they're more interested in being right. They want you to acknowledge that they are right. And they have, that's a direct conflict with the other party who immediately gets defensive. Well, social sustainable investing is saying, look, maybe what you're really after is you want sustainability of your products. And that sustainability does not conflict with being a little bit socially responsible. And let me show you why. We want to be on your side. We don't want to be a confrontation. We want to be a part of the team to make it better. Like, let's take an example. Environmental impact on farming, using chemicals and abusing the land with overplanting, or even growing the herds of cows. How to keep the land and herds healthy over longer periods of time, as opposed to just the short-term benefit. Maybe moving toward, you know, even if you're in the oil industry, is there ways to make it cleaner, less impactful on what you do? See, stuff like that. And I think that is actually a pretty darn good idea. You want, what's the goal? I always ask my clients, my family, when there's conflict, what is your goal? Is your goal to be right? Or is your goal to resolve the issues? If your goal is to be right and you just want to stand your ground, then just understand that's your goal and you'll probably not get any kind of agreement from the other party. If your goal is to have some kind of harmony, then what you do is you find common ground and you expand on the common ground. And that's what this sustainable investing idea is all about. And I like it. I really do. I hate being told by somebody, well, you shouldn't be investing in XYZ company because, you know, they make movies that are violent. Well, why don't we talk to them about making movies that make money? And maybe we can move them away from the movies that you don't like. Okay. See, that to me is much more sensible. You're going to get a lot more CEOs listening to you and taking you seriously if you approach it that way. And isn't that your goal? Achieve the goal. Don't achieve the good feelings of you being right. Achieve the good feelings of you having, you know, attaining a goal and moving toward what you want. Anyways, I don't want to get preachy about it, but it just seems to make sense, and I like the idea. I do. We're here for you, beginner experienced investor, 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you still can call 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is John. I was calling from Walnut Creek. I just had a general question. In the U.S., if I want to see how the market did, I can look up the Dow or the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. If I want to see how the Chinese stock market did for the day, or the Hong Kong, or the third one, I'll think about it in a sec. Would you use the Shanghai Composite, the Hang Seng? I can't think of the third one right now. Or are there any other indexes that you use to better track to see how the market did in Asia? Oh, the Nikkei was the other one. I'm sorry. I'm interested in just having something to look at to see how the markets in China, Japan, and Hong Kong did in the day. So thank you very much. I enjoy your show. Bye-bye.
Those are very good indexes. Japan, China, the Hang Seng, and the DK. You know, those are very good indexes. If you want to look at emerging markets in general, you know, instead of as country specific, I like to use the exchange traded fund as a proxy. All the different exchange traded funds. And you can look at them, look at a yearly chart, and you can see in a really quick view of what they've done over the year. So, but yeah, those are very good proxies for those markets. What about Australia? What about Brazil? What about South America? How about Europe? And each one of those I've just named have ETFs representing their markets. And some of them have several ETFs ranking their market. For instance, Brazil has EWZ, but most EWZ is in one big stock. I mean, we're talking about a huge portion of it, at least, is one big stock, and that's Petro Brazil. So it doesn't represent the whole market of Brazil. So I have built a list of the various ETFs showing me the health or lack of thereof of the various countries that I'm tracking, and I keep a watch list of all those, and I look at them almost every day. That's how I do it. But yeah, those are good indexes to track. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up next, the next half hour, company stock. How much is too much? That's going to be on Invest Talk 101. 888-99-CHARGE, anytime number, you can call right now.
Coming up on the next Invest Talk, an either-or approach is as old school as the cuckoo clock. Active versus passive mutual funds. Do you have to decide? That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. But your questions come first, so join us and bring your questions. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. This is Invest Talk for Tuesday, December 29th. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now, and you can always see Steve's latest check updates on investtalk.com, the next one coming up January 13th in San Ramon. Or if you're out of reach of our California offices, you can hook up with Steve on Skype or by telephone. Click on Schedule a Meeting on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, we're going to talk to Anthony in Fremont about Chipotle. How you doing, Anthony?
Good. Hey, Steve. So Chipotle, it's been going through some E. coli
right.
issues, and, mm-hmm. you know, their stocks come down quite a bit. I wanted it to pick up some when it was in the 500 range, but then there was another outbreak, so it's gone down a little bit more. So I wanted to see what you think about picking up some at this price level. You know, if there's any support, you know, what do the numbers and charts
Okay. It hasn't hit. There's no support yet. It hasn't hit support. It's still falling. So, Anthony, I'm going to say is it might be a bit early to get into it. You want to see some strength come back, and you like to see this news behind them. You know, by the way, everybody, Chipotle, symbol CMG, you know, they have 1,800 fast food Mexican restaurants. I'm sure most people know what it is. And they've been growing very, very, very fast over the years. And because of that, they got very, very, very high-priced stock. And then you had the E. coli breakout. And, of course, Anthony, there was like three of them. I mean, it's not just one. And three different parts of the country. Yeah. So that really tanked the stock. The first one came out back in October. And then another one. And then the most recent one last week. So I think you're on the right idea of, you know, this might be a bargain at some point. But don't think it's cheap yet. They're going to make $16.39 next year, and it is a, you know, a $489 stock, meaning that's about 23 PE range, and that's kind of high. So it's not cheap in the sense of overall market or that sector, but for Chipotle, it's cheap. Okay, because their low PE is 27. In the last 5 years.
For is Chipotle. There a recommendation? What would be an ideal price?
I really think if they don't have another disastrous breakout, because it will take it again. If they don't have another E. coli news item, I have a feeling we're getting very, very close to the bottom. for the stock, because it's going to start attracting value investors because of the very strong sales growth. Okay, because it's still going to grow very strong. Now, I'm also going to talk about Chipotle later on the show about what are the problems to look out for in a stock like Chipotle. What were the little red flags that maybe you could have seen? You would never have been able to foresee the E. coli thing. All you could have foreseen was, boy, this is very expensive stock. That's all you could have foreseen. And right now,
I think it might drop to 450
if there's no more outbreak. If there's no more outbreak, I think it's going to hover around 500.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's no more.
And long term wise, like 12 to 18 months, I mean, with their strategy, because they are one of those companies that are trying to do good, you know, good, nutritious, sustainable food. You think that, you know, that they are still a, you know, like a unique or a niche space?
That's a good question, Anthony. I think the healthy food industry and Chipotle trying to feed people healthy, even though they had the E. coli, I think that's here to stay for a long time. So I think that concept and Chipotle meeting that concept is here to stay. But they're going to have to make some changes in how they do things to give the confidence back to the public. And that's really what needs to take place. And we don't see that yet. But I do think that right around 500 looks like a good place for it to hang out, unless there's another bad news from some other place, you know, in some other restaurant. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks for the call. That's CMG, everybody. Chipotle. Let's go to Bill in Maryland. How you doing, Bill? Thanks for listening on the internet.
Well, thank you, Steve. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes, indeed. You talked about Roth IRA accounts and not being that recommended for older people. And I just want to tell you why I have a Roth and had it for a long time, and I keep adding to it. I'm 82 years old, and I'll tell you the reason. You tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I won't. Unless you really are wrong, I won't say that. But go ahead. Let's hear.
This Roth I have, Steve, I have my daughter as the beneficiary. That, to me, would be an investment I'm making for her future, not my future.
Okay.
That is why I continue to increase it every year, pay the tax, and feel good about it.
Okay. Well, I can see that as an argument for the Roth. And even though you could do that for a regular IRA, Bill, the daughter could inherit an inherited IRA, regular IRA. She could still inherit that as well. But at 82, you can't contribute to a regular IRA, and you can't, and you have to start withdrawing from it. And I can see withdrawing from it because you had those mandatory withdrawals from a regular IRA and put that into a Roth IRA. I can see that for your daughter.
Well, what I do is transfer from my regular IRA each year to the Roth and make that contribution in that way. And
there's nothing wrong with that concept. That's a perfectly valid. And see, when I talk,
and my daughter will be in a high tax bracket, so by getting that tax free, I think it just makes sense to me. Let me say it that way, Steve.
Okay. And Bill, have you talked? I understand that, and there is an argument for it. But have you talked to an accountant about that when she inherits it, and about your total estate, and is it over $5 million, and if she inherits?
No, it's not that high. I have discussed that with tax planners. And
Bill, that's a good argument. I'll buy it.
Okay. I listen to you all the time. I thought I'd just give you a call and comment on that. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. So that is a good way to try to get the money to the next generation, everybody, if you don't need the money. And that you do have to have some tax planning. And you do want to talk to an accountant, a CPA, about, you know, I have a lot of money that I'm not going to spend in my lifetime, and how do I get it over to the next generation with the least amount of tax consequence? I think that is a very smart thing to consider, you know, because why do you want to give it to Uncle Sam? I mean, why would you want to do that? Would you want to try to give it to your next generation as much as possible if you don't need it? I think most people would say yes. So I would say yes. Let's go back to Chipotle. Not necessarily Chipotle per se, but look at what happened with Chipotle because of the E. coli. And why did it get hit so hard would be the first question in my mind. Well, first of all, Chipotle's problem is probably, remember, it's E. coli, and it probably started because of the super fast expansion. Okay, as they grow really, really fast, it's hard to keep up with the demands of food production. You need all the things that you need to satisfy all those restaurants. They're going to open 500 new restaurants in a year. Actually, in the past 3 years, I should say that. Well, you got to supply every one of those restaurants with vegetables and meat. So all I'm saying is because of the speed of the growth, you're going to have growing pains. And it's very difficult to keep that quality the same. And I'll say this, Chipotle's done a very good job keeping the quality the same. But where are they getting all their products? They lose control of where they get it because they can't expand as fast. And Chipotle's top management received hefty bonuses based on the speed of their growth. That kind of leads to a problem because they're interested in growing the company as fast as possible to get more money. And, of course, you realize another problem, if you're an investor and you're looking at a company and it's expanding really, really fast, and the price of the stock is going up very, very fast, and it doesn't, the prices of the stock is much going much faster than the earnings. And if the entire Wall Street thinks it's just a wonderful stock to own, remember I told you last week, you know, the 10 most recommended stocks for 2015 did much worse than the 10 most hated stocks by the Wall Street analysts. They did much better than the 10 most loved stocks versus the hated stock. Wall Street loved in 2015, the beginning of the year, Wall Street loved Chipotle. Couldn't write enough better, great glowing articles about it. When everybody loves something, you should be wary as an investor. And the simple fact is, Chipotle was an expensive stock. The stocks get expensive, you should ratchet up your little red flag meter and say, this is scaring me a little bit. When I say expensive, what's the PE ratio? What's the price sales ratio? What's the return on equity? What's the debt? There's all these other kind of questions you have to ask yourself and say, yeah, that's an expensive stock based on the earnings you're going to make. Yeah, earnings are growing very fast. Sales are growing very fast. But when a PE gets into the 50, 60 range, you got to say, that's pretty high. So that should be something I got to be really careful here. Every stock that's like that, everyone, it's easy to pick them out. It's not hard. You know, if you make a little bit of effort, you'll know what stocks I'm talking about. I'm not going to recommend any of them, but you can look at, well, what about Tesla? Is Tesla expensive? They're going to make $1.81, and the stock is $237. Now, the stock has already fallen from $280 down to about $205, and now they're at $237. Is it expensive? Yes. Should you invest in it? I won't say no, but I will say this. I won't do it because it's too expensive for me. And I think it will someday get cheap to a place where I would be interested in it. But is it something you should get into now? I don't mind you investing in one or two of these stocks because they can still keep screaming up. They can. But I want you to at least have your little red flag up waving, saying, this is dangerous. This is dangerous. Don't put too much money in it. That's what I want. I want you to have some caution in your thinking. Above average investing for the average investor. That's what we're all about here on Invest Talk. We're here to help you avoid the mistakes that can cost you big bucks. In a falling market, better than average means suffering least. Suffering much less than the whole market going, not going down with it, but going down slower. It's very difficult to go up when the market goes down. That's, you know, cause who knows when that happens? It's very difficult. In a rising market, it means being at the being making money, but maybe not making all the money, but at least making it sustainable and keeping it. That's what they want. You want to keep that, don't you? Information, knowledge, perspective, those are all keys if you're going to be successful. So ask your questions. Bring your comments to me. 888-99-CHART. I really want to thank the caller about Bill from Maryland about that Roth and why he liked it. I like that. Let's have a discussion about it. 888-99-CHART.
Do you have questions about real estate? Is it time to downsize? Where do I begin? Should I sell my house or keep it as a source of income? These can be complex questions, but questions that need accurate answers. That's why KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff. Have a question about real estate? Send it directly to Justin. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Justin, great podcast. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Wondering if you could shed some light on precious metals. Specifically, I'm looking at Newmont Mining, ticker symbol N as in November, E, M as in Mike, along with Silver Wheaton, SLW. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Always listen to the show. Thanks again, Mike.
Okay, we own Silver Wheaton, so just so you know. Newmont Mining produces gold in U.S., Australia, Peru, Indonesia, New Zealand, Guyana, and Mexico. The question is where is gold going to go? Is gold low enough? Has it fallen far enough for these stocks to work? And that question is still unanswered. We don't know. It looks like every one of these precious metal mining companies have hit a bottom or are coming off the bottom slowly. That's what it looks like on a chart. But the question always has to go back is where do you think precious metals are going to go? And of course, what makes precious metals goes up? What makes them go up? Well, inflation makes them go up. War makes them go up. Economic fear makes them go up. And the dollar getting weaker makes them go up. Now, it's not a perfect scenario. Not if the dollar goes down, gold will go up. It's not necessarily that related, but it is in general. Those are the kinds of things that push gold prices up. And so you need to ask yourself, well, do you think the dollar is going to get weak or, you know, weaker? And I'm not sure that the dollar is going to get weak. I'm not buying that. So those are the kinds of questions. So I would say, yeah, you can start teasing into these kind of stocks. Just don't bet the farm. Okay. As we move into the final segment of the day, we welcome your questions about any money matter. 888-99-CHART is how you get through right now. When you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, you have access to a long list of recorded webinars like profiting in a rising interest rate environment. The information in the webinar, it could have a pretty big impact on your retirement portfolio. Just sign up. Go to InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com. I got an email from a listener named Galvin, and Galvin asked a question about GAAP versus reported earnings. He was doing some research, and he came across a company, and every once in a while he says he comes across this, where GAAP earnings and reported earnings are different. The GAAP would be show a loss, whereas reported earnings show a gain. And he wanted to know what the difference is. GAAP earnings, G-A-A-P, General Accepted Accounting Principles is what that stands for, GAAP earnings. And what it is, if you're looking at GAAP, that means that it's the numbers are reported in a format that many companies, almost all companies reported on the stock exchange, report in a format that everybody accepts and understands. And believe me, there's plenty of room in GAAP to fudge. But we're talking about numbers, right? So he's saying, well, wait a minute, why, and in this case he was looking at, the stock went up even though the GAAP earnings are negative and the reported earnings are positive. And I'll tell you this, you cannot relate a stock going up or down based on earnings alone. Because earnings, you got to look at them very carefully. They could be fudged. They could be massaged. They could be misleading. And non-GAAP earnings are even more misleading and more massaged and more dangerous. So use GAAP because it's consistent. Okay? U.S. Treasury yield. Hopefully we can get to it before the end of the day. Is it going to go up or down in 2016? Now let's get to one more question before the end of the day as well, because we'd like to answer questions first. 888-99-CHART. Mark called from Los Angeles.
Yes, hi. I'm listening to your show here this evening with my son, who's 14 years old, and I'm trying to inspire him to learn how to invest in the stock market as well. We're both beginners, for that matter. I have not done a lot of investing myself. I would appreciate whatever beginning advice, perhaps, you care to pass along. Again, I appreciate listening to your show. Hope to hear from you soon. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, when a young person, whenever I talk to a young person, I have lots of nieces and nephews in that age group, I always try to talk to them about what makes money. That you want to buy companies or own companies that make money. And that's the basic fundamental rule to me in investing. Sure, you can buy stocks that don't make money that go up. And sure, you can buy stocks that do make money and they go down. But eventually, if the company continues to make money, the stock over time will go up. And one of the problems you have with young people, and the problem they teach in school, by the way, is impatience. You think, I want it to go up today. I want it to be up tomorrow. And how they reference this in high school, I've done this several years in a row where nieces and nephews take a class and the teacher says, well, pick 10 stocks and we'll see how they do in 6 weeks or 8 weeks. It's like a contest. In 6 or 8 weeks, come on, that's unrealistic. You then pick stocks that are just a momentum stocks. And my nephews and the two that called me about this, I said, okay, we're either going to be at the top or we're going to be at the bottom of your class. Most likely we won't be in the middle. And I would just pick momentum stocks for them and say, these are the stocks that are going up just because they're going up, not based on the fundamentals. So in a 14-year-old, in that age group, you know, what do you like? I go to that. What do they like? Do they like video games? Well, who makes the video games? How much money do they make making those video games? Do you like movies? Maybe do you like Star Wars? How much money do you think Disney is going to make? Star Wars made $1 billion over the first weekend since it's been out. $1 billion for one movie. Things like that will get them interested. But you also got to teach them patience. Okay? Patience. Because stocks move slowly. And see, you just got to be careful. So find something they're interested in, a company, two companies, find out what they're buying, what they like. Maybe they like Nike shoes. I have a nephew who got 8 pairs of shoes for Christmas and loved them. Maybe look at Nike. I will get to the Treasury yield tomorrow, I promise, because I think it's a very interesting point. We'll make sure we'll do that. Our hour's up, everybody. If you have a question or comment that you want to share, you can get a note to me directly by going to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, I thank you very much for listening. And again, thank you for listening all year long. Have a great tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.